Waikatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome. We are diving deep today into one of the most, well, recognizable figures of the 20th century, Mahatma Gandhi. Now, everyone knows the story of Indian independence, but our mission here is really to move past the political history and maybe the saintly image, too.
That's exactly right. Today, we're going to treat Gandhi not just as, you know, a historical footnote or some revered figurehead, but as a systematic and, frankly, radical political philosopher.
A philosopher. Interesting.
Yes. And our sources, particularly the work of Bhikkhu Parekh, they present this really powerful case that Gandhi developed a fully coherent, well, a third way.
A third way. Okay. So a way that challenges the basic ideas of both what conventional liberal democracy and state socialism.
Precisely. He offers a really profound alternative model for human development, for governance. It's quite ambitious.
And you're saying this makes his ideas incredibly timely, even now.
Absolutely. I mean, whether you're grappling with global inequality or maybe democratic deficits, or perhaps just trying to find a more meaningful existence in this super high-speed materialistic world we live in.
Uh-huh.
Gandhi's synthesis, you know, pulling from both Eastern and Western thought, it offers potential solutions that, frankly, we haven't fully tapped into yet. That's really the intellectual payoff we're aiming for in this deep dive.
Okay, so to really get into that synthesis, we're relying heavily on Bhikkhu Parekh. Why him? What makes him the ideal guide through Gandhi's thinking?
Well, Parekh is, first off, a scholar of the highest caliber. I mean, a really distinguished political philosopher, an expert in multicultural theory.
Impressive credentials.
Definitely. But his qualifications, they go beyond just the academic titles. He brings this unique sort of bicultural vision to the material.
Bicultural. You mean because he grew up in Gujarat, the same part of India as Gandhi. So he has that kind of insider's understanding of the context.
Crucially, yes. That gives him an intimate feel for the language, the culture Gandhi was operating in. But then, and this is key, he applied the really sophisticated analytical tools of Western political philosophy to that understanding.
Ah, so he can translate it. Because Gandhi often spoke in, like, moral or spiritual terms, right?
Yeah.
Not standard political jargon.
Exactly. Gandhi's language doesn't always map easily onto modern political concepts. Parekh bridges that gap. He takes what might sound like spiritual pronouncements and translates them into rigorous political theory. Theory that, honestly, deserves a place alongside thinkers like Kant or Hobbes.
That's a big claim. But it's important to remember, Parekh isn't just a fanboy, is he? You mentioned he's a critical sympathizer.
Yes, that's vital. He doesn't shy away from acknowledging Gandhi's strategic limitations. For instance, his handling of the Hindu-Muslim partition issues, or that really intense, unresolved debate he had with B.R. Ambedkar about caste.
Right, the Ambedkar critique is pretty significant.
It is. And Parekh's willingness to engage with that criticism allows him to present Gandhi's work honestly. He shows where the philosophical ideal, you know, maybe bumped up against political reality. It doesn't diminish the ideas. If anything, it confirms their depth while acknowledging the complexities.
Okay, that makes sense. So let's get to the core thesis of Parekh's work then. You said it's like an intellectual biography. What's its main goal?
Its main goal is really to sweep aside decades of common misconceptions. You know, the idea that Gandhi was just religious or maybe anti-modern or even inconsistent in his thinking.
Uh-huh.
The core argument is actually simple, but it feels revolutionary. Gandhi created a genuinely innovative, systematic political philosophy. And perhaps his greatest contribution lies in radically rethinking, well, two key relationships. The one between means and ends and the link between individual change and societal change.
Okay, systematic. So where does Parekh say Gandhi starts building the system?
It really starts with Gandhi's quite total and radical rejection of modern Western civilization as he saw it. This is most famously laid out in his early work, Hind Swaraj.
Right, Hind Swaraj. So what was his fundamental issue? Was he just anti-technology?
No, not exactly anti-technology itself. His core issue was with the moral crisis he believed modern civilization inevitably produces. He actually called it satanic at one point.
Wow, strong word. Why?
Because he saw it as prioritizing above all else the insatiable multiplication of wants, this endless desire for more stuff, more material achievement over, say, collective well-being or genuine human development.
Gosh, that sounds incredibly relevant today, like eerily relevant. He's essentially arguing against the whole engine of infinite growth and consumerism, isn't he?
Absolutely. You could connect it directly to today's issues. He's critiquing the economic and social systems that, well, almost rely on creating endless desire, maybe through advertising or algorithms, and often locking people into cycles of debt just to keep functioning.
And industrialization, where did that fit in?
He viewed industrial capitalism, particularly its reliance on heavy machinery, as a system that inherently dehumanizes labor. It concentrates wealth unfairly, and it tends to treat both human beings and the natural world as just instruments, resources for material gain.
So it wasn't about going back to some imagined past.
Not simply, no. It was a call for an alternative kind of modernity, one rooted in moral values and collective well-being, not just material output.
Okay. So that powerful critique of civilization then leads directly to the practical political tool he developed, Satyagraha. We often hear it translated as passive resistance, but Parekh says that's misleading.
Very misleading. He emphasizes it's an active philosophy of action. The term itself means truth force. Satya is truth, agraha is holding firm or force.
Truth force. Okay, so how is that different from passive resistance in practice?
The key difference is the goal. Passive resistance usually aims to block or coerce the opponent to make them give in. Satyagraha, on the other hand, aims for conversion.
Conversion? How?
The Satyagrahi, the person practicing it, uses voluntary self-suffering. Not violently, but by willingly accepting hardship, they aim to appeal directly to the opponent's conscience, to awaken their sense of justice. The goal is to transform the relationship itself, moving both sides towards a kind of higher shared understanding of the truth.
That sounds incredibly demanding, personally demanding.
It is, and Parekh really details this. For Satyagraha to work, Gandhi believed the practitioner needed immense inner moral strength. This was cultivated through strict self-discipline, including vows like ahimsa nonviolence, not just in action, but in thought and word too, and brahmacharya.
Brahmacharya, that's usually translated as celibacy, right?
It often is, narrowly. But in Gandhi's political philosophy, Parekh shows it means something broader. Comprehensive self-control. It's about mastering your own desires, your fears, your ego.
Why was that so important for political action?
Because it ensures the Satyagrahi's actions are motivated purely by principle, by the pursuit of truth, not by, say, selfish ambition, anger, or weakness. For Gandhi, this moral purity wasn't just a personal virtue. It was absolutely essential for the effectiveness of public action. Your inner state directly impacted your outer influence.
Okay, but let's address the tension here. If Satyagraha relies on appealing to the opponent's conscience, on finding a shared truth, how does Parekh deal with situations where that seems impossible, like the Ambedkar critique regarding caste?
Yeah, that's a really crucial point. Ambedkar argued quite powerfully that Satyagraha might fail against deeply entrenched institutionalized oppression like the caste system, where the oppressors might seem to lack that conscience to appeal to.
So does Parekh suggest Gandhi was just wrong then?
Not exactly wrong, but perhaps that the application had limits. Parekh is clear. Gandhi himself sometimes struggled with applying his own ideals perfectly in the messy reality of politics. The Ambedkar critique highlights a key challenge. Some power structures might be so rigid, so devoid of empathy at their core, that self-suffering might just lead to more suffering, not conversion. But Parekh uses this tension not to dismiss Gandhi, but to show the complexity. It reveals the gap that can exist between a profound philosophical principle and its political effectiveness in every single situation. It actually makes Gandhi's framework feel more realistic, more nuanced.
That grounding definitely makes it more compelling. Okay, let's try to synthesize this. Based on Parekh's analysis, what are, say, three core themes that really stand out? Themes that maybe connect directly to how we navigate life today.
Well, the first one, and maybe the most challenging for many of us, is this idea of the unity of means and ends.
Ah, yes. Oh, no.
The idea that the methods you use inevitably shape the outcome you get. You know, we often justify cutting corners or using aggressive tactics, maybe even deceit, for what we think is a noble goal.
The ends justify the means, right? That old chestnut.
Exactly. But Gandhi, through Parekh's lens, insists, nope, you cannot build a peaceful society using violence. You can't create justice through unjust methods. The means become the end in a way. It's a really powerful daily check on that win at all costs mentality, whether in politics, business, or even personal arguments.
That's a big one. Okay, a second essential idea has to be Swaraj, usually translated as self-rule or independence.
Right, independence from Britain politically.
Yes, but for Gandhi, that was only one layer. His philosophy, as Parekh unpacks it, makes it clear that political freedom is kind of Hollow may be meaningless without inner swaraj.
Inner swaraj, meaning
mastery over oneself, over your own desires, your own fears, your own ego. If we are slaves to our appetites or driven by fear, Parekh suggests Gandhi believed we're never truly free, even if we live in a democracy. It really challenges us, doesn't it, to look inward first before just demanding external changes.
It really does.
Okay, third theme.
I'd say decentralized democracy or Gram Swaraj village self-governance.
Ah, the village republics idea.
Exactly. Gandhi had this vision of, well, truly self-governing local communities, villages, neighborhoods maybe, where power starts locally and flows upward, not downward from some distant capital.
And the relevance today.
Well, think about the alienation many people feel from huge centralized political systems. The feeling that your vote doesn't matter, that politicians are out of touch. Gandhi's Gram Swaraj directly addresses that. It's a call to build more resilient, self-reliant communities where people have real agency, real power over their immediate lives. Fascinating. So those are the big themes. What about some of those memorable, sharp ideas or phrases that Parekh highlights, the ones that really capture Gandhi's philosophical approach?
Yeah, there are a few key concepts that Parekh uses to crystallize Gandhi's thought, especially how he integrates personal ethics with public life. They're quite well known, but Parekh gives them philosophical weight. The first is maybe the most foundational. Truth is God.
Not God is truth, but truth is God. What's the significance of flipping it?
It's philosophically crucial. By saying truth is God, Gandhi makes the search for truth the highest moral calling, accessible to everyone, believer or non-believer. It detaches the ultimate value from any specific religious dogma. This then provides the groundwork for genuine pluralism and tolerance, the idea he called Sarva Dharma Samhava, equal respect for all paths to truth.
Okay, that makes sense. What's next?
Probably the most quoted and maybe the most directly applicable piece of advice. Be the change you wish to see in the world.
Yeah, yes. Everyone knows that one.
Right. But Parekh emphasizes its philosophical weight. It's this absolute insistence that personal transformation must come before, or at least alongside, social change. It completely rejects the modern tendency to sort of separate our private lives from our public commitments, or to think we can just rely on institutions or politicians to be moral for us.
It puts the responsibility squarely back on the individual.
Entirely. And then thirdly, related to that, is his view on fulfillment. The best way to find yourself is to lose yourself in the service of others.
So fulfillment isn't about getting more or being number one.
Exactly the opposite, according to Parekh's reading of Gandhi. True human realization, genuine self-discovery, it doesn't come through accumulation or aggressive self-assertion, which are maybe the hallmarks of modern individualism. Instead, it comes through selfless dedication to the collective good, to the welfare of all what Gandhi called Sarvodaya.
Powerful ideas. So let's bring this down to earth. How can you, listening right now, actually integrate some of these, frankly, quite radical ideas into your daily life? Any tangible applications? Well, on a personal level, you could practice that inner swaraj through something like mindful consumption. Gandhi called it aparigraha non-possession, or maybe non-hoarding is a better translation.
Right, not being attached to material things.
Exactly. So instead of constantly seeking fulfillment through buying the next thing, applying aparigraha could mean making conscious choices, maybe choosing ethically produced goods, supporting local businesses, a kind of modern swadeshi. It acts as a small daily counterpoint to that relentless consumer culture.
That makes sense. And professionally. Mm-hmm. Say if you're in a leadership position, there, you could explore Gandhi's concept of trusteeship.
Trusteeship, how does that work?
Instead of viewing a company or organization purely as, you know, property belonging to shareholders, designed only to maximize profit for them, a leader acting as a trustee sees themselves as responsible for the well-being of all stakeholders.
So employees, customers, the local community, the environment.
Precisely. The leader holds the organization in trust for all of them. It fundamentally shifts the focus from just profit maximization towards creating shared, sustainable value for everyone involved. It's quite a different model of business ethics.
It really is. And what about conflict? We all face conflicts, big or small. Here, applying the spirit of Satyagraha could be really transformative, whether it's a dispute at work or, you know, an argument within the family.
So not trying to win the argument.
Right. Instead of focusing on victory, the focus shifts to genuinely trying to understand the other person's perspective, their relative truth, as Gandhi might say. You become willing to maybe accept some personal inconvenience or even temporary suffering, not to appease, but to transform the relationship itself. The goal is a lasting, mutually agreeable solution, not just one person defeating the other.
That requires a lot of patience and empathy.
It absolutely does. It's not easy. So wrapping things up, what's the one thing that really stands out to you from Parikh's analysis? What surprised you or resonated most?
For me, it's that powerful, almost seamless integration of the private and the political. Gandhi, through Parikh's interpretation, just makes it impossible to neatly separate your personal moral life from your public actions or your political positions. The lasting insight, I think, is that real, lasting, collective solutions, whether for social justice or environmental sustainability, they have to begin with individual commitment. With each of us actually trying to live according to our highest values, the change starts within.
Yeah, I agree with that. My final takeaway is how incredibly, almost disturbingly prescient Parikh shows Gandhi to be. His critique of unchecked materialism, his deep concern about the dehumanizing pace of modern life, his warnings against the dangers of over-centralized power, these things feel more urgent now than ever, don't they?
They really do, especially in our current age of, well, ecological crisis, staggering global inequality, and often polarized politics. But he doesn't just critique. Parikh shows that Gandhi offers hope. He demonstrates that it's actually possible to forge a path where you can be both deeply principled and effectively pragmatic at the same time. That's a powerful message.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akhatra Foundation.